This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Back to the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. It's a Thursday, a little bit after 9 o'clock, which means it's time for the MGO Blog Roundtable, brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTK.com, MGO Blog Roundtable. The fellas are here. The boys are back in town, starting with the venerable Craig Ross. Craig, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. I'm still old.
Someone was said they...
Better than the alternative.
Yeah.
They were looking for your obscene diaries of a Michigan fan. They couldn't. They went to...
Literati didn't have it?
Because he sneaks copies into Literati that they don't know they have.
I mean, I'll put some more in there, I guess. They don't... I mean, maybe they throw them in the garbage. I don't know. But I mean...
How does that ring up?
At least recycle your book, Craig.
Yeah. I mean, if someone's local, they can call me. They can have a copy. Yeah,
okay. So you only drop them off at Literati? You don't go to, like, Nicholas?
He doesn't drop them off. He sneaks them in.
He sneaks them in. Yeah.
Take them to the library.
True.
Craig, take them to the library. They'll put them out there.
Implies a consent that is not present.
Right. It's sort of the opposite. It's sort of the opposite of stealing, I guess.
No, I mean, I think Literati would take your book. I mean, it was a real publisher and
yeah, it was
all
a
that
real
stuff,
publisher.
Right?
Yeah, like, sort of.
They bankrupt. Care about that stuff.
They went bankrupt, but they were real. I mean,
yeah.
So
and so your next piece, your next work. What is? Have you come up with a title?
Well, the second book was which I like.
Yeah, he's talking about your upcoming.
Oh, my upcoming book, right?
Oh, that it'll depend on Seth Fisher. I suspect it's called.
It's not a good title.
It's not a good title. Football When Dinosaurs Walk the Earth is what I'm tentatively calling it. It's about football, Michigan football prior to 1900. It has a lot of interesting, weird, funny stuff that I found.
All right. Brian Cook, how are you this morning?
Good.
MGO Blog, you guys know all about the blog. And then, of course, I didn't give you your second book.
Don't worry about it.
All right.
I can't even remember the title half the time.
Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Tell folks about the Power Rank.
Hey, I run the Power Rank. I also run the Football Analytics Show. I talked to Michael Lombardi, who gave Jim Harbaugh his first job in Oakland. It was a very interesting conversation. I asked him about what he thought about Michigan. Pretty interesting answer. Listen to it. I think it's about 5:50 in the podcast. Check it out.
All right. So,
hey, wait a second. Brian, you thought that Harbaugh and Franklin got into it after the game?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
No,
you thought
they didn't really get into it, but like as Harbaugh was going off the field, Franklin's just staring at him.
Oh.
Like it wasn't on camera or anything. It's like after they parted, Franklin just kind of like looks back.
But Franklin kind of pulled him in, right? And said something extra. Like Harbaugh kind of came in to do the shake and leave, and Franklin pulled him in.
I felt like he seemed a little upset and was kind of looking back at Harbaugh, and I was like, yeah.
You know, all this sensitivity, man, is just.
I didn't notice it, but these guys
who were on the other end of the stick last year. Now you come back this year, you get beat down. I'm talking about Michigan State, talking about Penn State, of course. Now all of a sudden you want to cry. You're offended. You're upset because you got treated so poorly when the shoe was on the other foot. And you were smiling and laughing at the end of the game. You tried to run it up. And then, of course, over the years with Michigan State, all the talking they've been doing, and suddenly when Michigan does it, now it's a problem.
Of course it is. Hey, I mean, James Franklin has every right to try to score at the end of last year, but Michigan has every right to use that as motivation this year.
I only wish I had a nickel for every tweet that had the words Harbaugh and class in them this year. It's been amazing.
I what did you guys make of this? So we're going to get into this game, but what did you guys make of 4th and 17, end of the half, timeout? You know,
I have no idea.
Did you see what he said, though?
He thought he was going to go for it.
He thought he was going to go for it. It's like, why even say, if that's true, why would you admit that?
Well, he's got to have some kind of explanation.
You could say you thought I might have too many men on something other than my strategy was horrid.
Yeah.
Other than I am a doofus. You can have something other than that, right?
This stuff happens like every week too. Like Michigan State game. They had a game where they had a change of possession. I think it was the Iowa game. And then he's out there on the field trying to call timeout.
Oh, yeah.
And there's like
right, yeah,
two of his assistant coaches are like hauling him back physically.
Wasn't it
like,
after a turnover?
Well, they said it wasn't a turnover, but at the time he was trying to call a timeout, he thought Penn State had gotten the ball back. And then the ref comes over and he's like, "You didn't want a timeout." He's like, "Yeah, right, I don't want to." He pats him on the back.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, couldn't the ref just say, James, you don't want a timeout. You don't want this timeout. Yeah.
But like, that happens a lot. It happens like seemingly every year against Michigan. Like he took a timeout to give Michigan a free Hail Mary. Like was it 2014?
Yeah.
It was him versus Brady Hoke, and they were each making more boggling decisions by the. Like he called timeout. They were punting from the one, and he's like, "Oh, we can't get a delay game. Timeout." What he needs Joe Moorhead again,
man.
Oh my God! All right. Right. But it was a thrashing. Michigan destroyed. And really, I've been saying all week, the first defensive series and the first offensive series of the game, that was the game. Those series, those define the game.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have, 18 passes versus 54 runs and you're running for 5 yards a clip, that's domination. Mm-hmm. Michigan didn't really even have to have the pretense of a balanced offense and still put up 35 points with the help of a pick for the last touchdown. But with a little bit more efficiency when they managed to get into field goal range a couple times, then you're looking at a real blowout.
I have some questions on the first series for you guys. I was thinking as this was going on of the quote, before you have a revolution, you have to have a revolutionary theory. And this is from Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov. And this first series was all runs, I think.
Yep.
And it was all mostly out of pistol. And it was, if you look back, we had 12 pistol formations in the first quarter. Yeah. And I don't know how much pistol we've run this year. Not a whole lot.
I've seen
a little bit.
It's
some
been sprinkled in, yeah.
But it was pretty much pistol. And I wonder, and out of 12, a lot of 12 personnel, and even some 13.
That's one running back, two tight ends.
Yeah, and so I wonder if the idea was, we're just going to pound it at you using our general palette of stuff, split zones, down G, inside zone. But we're going to run it out of pistol because it isn't what we've really done all that much, and maybe we'll keep you off balance that way. I mean, do you see some?
I saw something similar to that, but it was a little bit different. Is that so? Michigan's been using this arc keeper for Patterson all year, where the tight end comes back on split zone and just kind of dodges the defensive end and goes to the second level. So they were doing that with tight ends already to the side where they wanted to arc from, and this I think really caught Penn State off guard. Like they were unprepared for the fact that this defensive end who thought what he was going to get blocked is suddenly on block. He's crashing down, and then the arc blocks are coming from a different place. And they did a really great job of doing it from a bunch of different formations. There was like a jet sweep one that they kind of screwed up.
Well, they were
the
setting
the
screen pass up in that one.
I really like what they were doing in the ground game in this game because they did so much of that split zone stuff, so much of that action to the backside that in the second half, Higdon rips off a 19-yard run, and Evans rips off like a 34-yard run on first and 20. And those are just split zone, but the linebackers were so concerned about Michigan's like quarterback arc game and the cutback there that they were heading to the backside of the line.
Right, and vacating the middle of the field.
On frontside action. Yeah. And like Michigan didn't have to run anything different. They just kind of had to tell the back to look for this particular thing that was there. And it reminded me, I don't remember if people remember the video of Harbaugh at the Virginia Tech Orange Bowl where they have this great sideline video of him like just talking and doing all this stuff. And this is a absolute blowout of Virginia Tech. And one of the things that he does is he tells his running back, the back door is open. And then the next drive, he rips off a 50-yard run by cutting it back. And I kind of feel like that was those plays where he's all right, the front door's open now. And they did that because they have something that an opponent has to respond to, and once they respond to it, other things open up.
Yeah, I mean, this when Harbaugh was first hired, I give Brian major props for this. When he was first hired, he made a lot of noises about what we're going to see is a lot of old wine and new bottles, or a lot of new wine and old bottles, and that you're going to see a lot of formations, a lot of stuff that looks subtle and different, but subtly different, but different and effective. And that's sort of what you predicted right from the get-go, I think. And I think this has come to fruition.
Sure, I'll take credit for that.
Yeah.
defensively, it was the very first play of the game, they hit a big slant, right?
Yeah.
But Mick Sorley gets bombed by Rashawn Gary.
Yeah.
And then a couple of plays, and then
a run,
and then there are two sacks, and that's like, dude, he has to be thinking.
He has five completions the whole game.
There was that period toward the end of the half where he started to get a little time, but he was under fire all day.
Yeah, and that at the end of the half was like tempo. They got a little thing going. Like Chase Winovich tapped out for the first time possibly in his career. And so there's a little bit of tiredness there, and also you don't have your rush package on the field. That rush package is insane. That rush package is out of its mind. Michigan is getting sacks on 19% of passing downs. So one out of every five passing downs is a sack.
Well,
and there's throwaways, and there's pressures, and there's all that other stuff that doesn't get counted in there. They're number one in the country by a huge margin because that package is – nobody can.
Well, I mean, they what they do with Uche,
it's unreal. No one's figured out how to block this kid. It's like four or five games now that like.
Yeah, I was talking to Mike McCray yesterday, and he said, man, he's always been a fast guy, but the difference now is, he's added some mass, and they've thrown some counters in there, so he doesn't have to just be a speed guy anymore. He can use his hands. He can rush with power. And he just said, man, he is a beast to try to block.
Well,
and we're seeing that on the field. And Don Brown, it's not like he's always on the edge. Sometimes he might be looping inside on a stunt. They do different things with him where sometimes you don't know where he's coming from, and teams that makes him even tougher to deal with.
Yeah, his second sack where he loops inside on that stunt explodes upfield.
Well, they have Pay on that one at tackle, right? Pay's at tackle, and Uche's at end, and they twist him, and it's hopeless. They're just,
but his,
just
his,
too fast.
His explosion was just like, there are plays where, Denard's first play where he fumbles the ball and
takes
off. That was like the defensive line version of that where I'm like, wow, that is a lot of momentum right there. So, and then late in the game, they became so concerned with Uche that Devin Bush was able to loop around on a stunt, basically untouched. They got him like at the last second, and then the quarterback's able to scramble out, and Uche comes back. But like, imagine being so concerned with a guy that you're like, this is the first priority when Devin Bush is on the field.
Right, and that's not even and that guy when you start the game, he's not even out there.
No,
that's the guy they're bringing off the bench.
He's tied for 17th in the country in sacks.
But think about how insane that is. You have to game plan for a guy that doesn't even start.
Well,
plays like 20% of Michigan snaps.
No, but how many snaps did he get the first four games of the year?
He was not.
They put in Furbush mostly at the beginning, weren't they?
It was about 60-40 Furbush, So, like, yeah, he was struggling to find his place. I think we can say he's found it.
I agree.
And now it's like, is he going to be Chase Winovich's replacement next year? I kind of think so.
I kind of think so too. But yeah, what did you think of? I mean, obviously didn't chart it. What did you think of Rashawn's performance in his first game back?
I thought that he was a little bit, raring at the bit to go, like kind of like last year a little bit, where there were a couple plays where he flew upfield.
Too far,
got out of position on some runs. But he was an impact guy in the pass rush. One of the Glasgow sack was largely him, where he's just running through a left guard who isn't ready for Rashawn Gary. And, I thought he had a little bit of rust, but it was good to see him back, and he's still Rashawn Gary. He just hasn't put it all together yet. So.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think Pro Football Focus did too. They graded him reasonably high. He over-pursued a couple plays, but otherwise he played really well.
I mean, if you have been on the bench for four games and come back out, you're going to do that a little bit.
Was there anything that you saw in that game defensively or you're like, well,
Aiden Hutchinson kind of came up a little bit too far on their touchdown, and Don Brown's face after that play was priceless, which will tell you everything you need to know about Don Brown.
Because they were, I know one of the things, talking to some of the guys after the game, they said, Don was like, maybe I should have left the starters in. Maybe I should have left the starters. He wanted that shutout.
I don't think there was anything that I thought was outright bad that was at all consistent. There was, you know, a play here and there. I do think that obviously something was a little bit off of McSorley. That might have been Michigan doing that to him and not necessarily the injury, but I think, you know, we should prepare for the fact that Dwayne Haskins is not going to be turfing slants at people's feet or overthrowing guys by 5 yards.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought the backup quarterback, even with the crazy interception.
Which, who was he throwing to?
I have no idea.
He's throwing to our guy.
Yeah, I mean, aside from that, Watson. I thought he played better than McSorley. I mean,
I didn't think McSorley was right above and beyond what the Michigan defense did to him. Kind of all season, you know. I mean, you're looking at this 52%, and I know they've had a lot of drops, 52% completion rate. It's different. I don't know if it's Moorhead or...
It's definitely Moorhead.
It's Moorhead.
Because they're still running that Wildcat stuff, and that didn't actually work last year. Like, it got the one big run because they had the cool tweak where the left tackle passed that and Gary bought it. And then after that, they got 3 yards of play on it. And now they don't have Barkley, and they're like, let's continue doing this. And I kind of feel like the guy who's there right now, I think his name's Ricky Rain, is just kind of going through the motions and doesn't really understand how the pieces fit together.
The fans want him out.
Say
it's time to make a change.
The second series for Michigan, too, was interesting because that's when they showed the jet action, and I think they were showing jet action and split zone. They ran it inside twice, and then the third time, and I think the setup was Penn State was supposed to and probably were on the third time they ran it looking for the jet sweep, and instead they faked the jet sweep too, and they've got this beautiful zone set up. I mean beautiful screen set up. It's a touchdown if they can get the ball over there, and he does have Patterson has someone in his face. He's got to lob it a little high. I also think Higdon could have taken a step down the field as opposed to jumping for it. Yeah. But that was a beautiful play.
It was beautifully set up. I think you're right. I think it was going to be a touchdown. We'll get into Shea on the other side. And, again, another efficient effort by Michigan's quarterback. We'll have the guys talk about his performance on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket.
Welcome back to the M. Goble Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket, online at WTK.com. The M. Goble Roundtable is brought to you by Home Shore Lending. Home Shore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. We're live here inside the Emden Studios. We have Brian Cook, Craig Ross, Ed Fang, and so let's talk about Shea and his performance in this game. I felt like he was going to win the efficiency battle with Trace McSorley, and that's exactly what he did in this contest. Of course, he had a fierce running game behind him. That always helps, but, hit some big throws. His best one, though, they took off the board with a holding call.
Yeah, I mean, it was a legit call. Yep. Yeah. Like, you can't complain about that one, but that is painful, especially for Tariq.
Yeah, exactly. It was great to see Tariq Black back and ran a great route and got called back.
So what did you think of Shea's showing?
Well, the run stuff, when you were talking about how he had a fierce running game, I thought you were referring to Shea himself.
Yeah.
Because I thought almost all of his reads were completely on point in this game. And he was even able to make a couple guys miss. Like there was a safety coming down at the line of scrimmage when Michigan was putting it on him, and he dodged that guy and ripped off a big run. And he had another kind of Tate Forcier cut up field against a couple guys. And that's I think that's really been the basis for Michigan's ground game for the last four or five games. And he's getting better at it as he gets more comfortable with it. So, I mean, Penn State was not giving him tough decisions either, because that end was just crashing the whole time, and they were trying to replace him. They didn't do that very well at all. So that part was really encouraging. You know, I thought he made some progress on his reads. There were still a couple of, like, the fourth and two to Gentry, which was late. You know, the pass to DPJ, that was the overturned targeting was late. And just – it's kind of par for the course where he's really, really, really accurate.
Right.
But sometimes he just doesn't see the field quickly enough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you want to pick on him, like, he kind of underthrew the completion to Nico Collins, underthrew deep one.
That might have been a wind issue to some extent.
That's what I thought, too.
Because the ball was fluttering, and the wind was blowing fairly heavily at that point, and the ball seemed to get baffled some in the wind.
And Collins was, like, slowing up, and then it had to extend, so it kind of felt like he was having a tough
trouble
time
judging with the wind.
It.
He did a great job,
I think. Then, obviously, the screen to Higdon. He wants that one back.
I don't think that's a miss on his part.
No?
I think he needed to get it over the defensive lineman, and Higdon misjudged it.
I agree with that. I think it was more on Higdon than Patterson, although it wasn't an easy play for Higdon either.
No, it wasn't an easy play, but I think it was there.
It was there. I thought, in the run game that Patterson really didn't make a mistake. I mean, nothing that was really obvious, and I thought
than the one where he led him into the big hit. I mean, he even said that after the game.
He was talking about the
run game. In the pass game, there were a couple on the fourth and two, as Brian points out. I thought if he holds the ball a second, he's going to find Higdon wide open. If he passes it early, he's going to get it fitted into Gentry, and so that one was a problem. There was one ball down the middle that I thought he underthrew. Where DPJ had them become a defender, but beyond that he wasn't bad.
When he underthrows, when he throws a deep ball and it's off, it's always a little bit short, and that's what you want because you're still giving your guy a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And that DPJ play was I remember a little bit differently. I remember the defensive back being able to get up and get a hand on it, but it was a close thing. And if that's a little bit different, if DPJ is able to pull off the Manningham where you slow up and kind of wall off the defender and then extend for it, that could be a touchdown. So when he does miss, it's usually not by much, and it's usually productive, even so.
I agree with him.
It just feels like the progression is there. He's getting better, and it just that Jake Rudock moment I still feel like is there, where it just all starts to click.
He's been better than Rudock at the beginning of the season, so the increment can't be as high.
Right, right.
But I agree. I like it. Just kind of feels like once he gets comfortable and is seeing things like at like his maximum rate, he's just going to be lights out. And hopefully we can get to that this year. I mean, he's probably not going to get a lot of reps against Rutgers, so.
I'm not saying Rutgers is good, but I don't think they're quite as bad as the 36-point line shows.
39.
39.
Got to 40.
Yeah, I mean.
Michigan covers.
I have the line in this game half. More. I have it more like 28. And I don't think this is going to be quite as much of a walkover.
Because you think they're going to score on the backups. Michigan's backup.
Perhaps, from a gambling point of view, but I just think
they're going to get nothing against the starters.
I don't think that offensively Rutgers is going to do a damn thing. But defensively, they're not quite that terrible.
I know, but it's not going to matter if they throw in five picks, which they did on 13 attempts.
Yeah, is Arthur Sitkowski still their quarterback?
Yes, he is still their quarterback.
Okay, yeah, that's painful. But I think, it's a hard game for Michigan in some ways because you're coming off a sequence of big games.
This is Lou Holtz worthy.
Lou Holtz, no.
No, you can't get up for Rutgers like you can.
You can't
some
get
of these
up for
games.
It. It's a big, and Rutgers may get up for it. They aren't incompetent on defense. They're not great on defense. They're not incompetent. They're incompetent on offense. I agree.
Biggest concern in this game,
injuries.
That is don't get hurt. Don't get hurt.
I mean, we're not going to lose this game, but on the other hand, I'm not sure 40 makes sense as a line.
As a first half line, I agree. It's a little steep.
First half line.
What do you guys think about Quinn Nordin? What's your take on
that field goal block? Was not his fault.
Okay.
There's a guy who's
left in.
Well, but just the trajectory over the last three games. I mean, I feel like we've had a couple situations where Harbaugh hasn't given him a shot at like a 50-yarder, which you would feel like is in the kid's wheelhouse. Like, is he still struggling?
Well, he's trying to kick off the Michigan State turf, which has been soddened. They didn't put a tarp over the field, and so it's like, sure, that's probably a footing issue. And then this was nothing. Like, Gentry needs to block the guy to the inside, and then this goes up. And
was that Gentry who?
It was. Yeah. Michigan's tight ends had, like, the only kind of negative I have for probably the whole game is that Michigan's tight ends had some issues blocking.
Particularly, I think, McCune.
Yes, and McCune is kind of in a difficult position because he's the guy who gets all the stuff that's a little bit different every play. Yeah. So sometimes he's supposed to be running split zoning, kicking out an end, and sometimes he's supposed to dodge that end. And sometimes he's supposed to not be... sometimes the split zone is a little bit different, and he's not supposed to kick out, but he's supposed to go to the linebacker. And he did not do a good job of remembering what he was supposed to be doing on all of his plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say they're asking a lot of their tight ends.
Especially him, because he's the guy who's always headed backside. Yeah. So he's the guy, like, Gentry's going to be in line, and he's going to do okay. There's a lot more that can go wrong with what McCune is trying to do. And unfortunately, it did kind of go wrong in this game.
All right. Well, you know, and I think one of the reasons why, obviously, you know, what they think of Gentry as a pass catcher. I mean, they had him at a receiver to start out. But Jim has called Sean McCune as the best blocker. He's called him the best blocker on the team.
Yeah, and in other games, that may be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Not this one. One interesting thing I thought is they brought back their, like, triple tight end set where they just have all three tight ends to one side of the line. And Penn State really had difficulties with that because they couldn't really deal with it. So Michigan was able to double their defensive tackles and blow them out and pick up, like, an easy 5 yards. The last touchdown was that, where it's just there's too many gaps across this front for Penn State to really handle it. And I think that's kind of an artifact of Michigan being an unusual offense to play these days. Yeah.
734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. You can email us at studio@wtk.com. Let's go to the phones. Talk to Don in Ann Arbor. Don, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Question. Some Michigan fans are fearful that a 12-1 Big Ten champion Michigan will be passed over by the playoff committee in favor of a 12-1 Alabama that whose only loss is in the SEC championship game to Georgia. Is this silly paranoia that's not worth thinking about, or is there some justification, in your opinions, for having this fear? Thanks.
You guys know my position on this. I've been saying it last week it was about LSU, this week it's about Georgia. So your take.
I mean, I just can't imagine that the world would not split in twain if the TV executives didn't get a 12-1 Michigan in the playoff.
Yeah, the Michigan world would, but do you think
others
around the country be crying tears for Michigan?
No, they wouldn't be crying tears, but I think they would. I mean, this committee, since the inception of the playoff, has said they're putting an emphasis on conference championships. We've relatively seen that, except for Ohio State not making it last year with two losses. So, I mean, if they're going to do what they said they'd done, they're going to put Michigan in. And plus, everyone overrates the fact that, you kind of think that Notre Dame's just kind of going to run the table. I mean, there are other opportunities for teams to fall. And
the assuming for the sake of argument, Notre Dame and Clemson went out. And you wind up in the scenario he laid out. Those two teams are undefeated, and you got a 12-1 Georgia.
12-1 Bama.
12-1 Bama.
12-1 Michigan.
And 12-1 Michigan. Who gets left out?
I mean, Bama. And the conference champs make it. That's what the committee should do. It's not like Michigan's got
holes. That's what the committee should do. I agree with you guys. I agree. Brian makes a compelling, legitimate, logical case. The resume, the victories that Michigan will have on its resume surpass those that, I mean, all Alabama will have at that point is a win, a dominant win over LSU. That'd be it. But they're the defending champs from the SEC that they're deferential to anyway. And everyone's saying this is the best Bama team ever. Maybe they had an off game. I think the excuses for Bama would be no shortage of excuses for Bama losing to Georgia if it were to happen.
If it were to happen, sure. I just, what's the chance they lose anyway?
I don't think they're going to lose to Georgia.
It's going to be about 70% Alabama to win that game.
I mean, that guy, so I watched that game, and the guy, what was his name, Quinnen Williams?
Yes.
Was it?
He's very good.
That guy was a backup last year.
Yes.
They said he had 10 tackles. The stats were, it's emblazoned in my mind. 10 tackles, 7 solos, 3.5 tackles for a loss. And I think it was 2.5 sacks. He was a wrecking ball.
Let's be honest. How enthusiastic are any of you guys for us to play Alabama?
I don't want Bama.
I'd rather play Bama than Clemson.
No, I want the game.
Water polo?
I think any team can be beaten.
Yeah,
so
any team can be beaten.
Let's give me the chance.
Think about the matchups, chance. Right?
Okay.
You get Bama, you get the pass offense, which is, I think, matches up well with what Michigan does on defense. You get Clemson, you get 4 guys that are going in the first round of the NFL draft on that defensive line. I don't like that at all.
That's the price you pay playing at the top level. I mean, you're going to play some dudes.
Bama.
Now, if for Michigan to beat either of those teams, again, I think it comes out because the defense, there's no question, Michigan has the defense to hang with and beat those guys. It's how much progression will we see offensively, specifically in the passing game? Because what was evident against Bama is you're going to have to make plays through the air under duress against coverage with guys in phase. You got to make throw. You got to throw guys open against Bama. I think Shea is capable of doing that, but you know there's some time and some progress. There's some time that's left and some progress to be made in that time to get to that level. And I think that's the case for all the teams that might face Bama. I think that's the case for Clemson. I think that's the case for
Georgia,
and certainly the case for Notre Dame. So, you know, we'll see if these teams are able to make that kind of progress.
Well, we got to win some games first, and it isn't axiomatic we're going to beat Ohio State
at
Columbus, and it isn't even axiomatic we're going to beat Northwestern at Indianapolis, or wherever that game's at.
All right, let's get to a break.
One more segment of the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. The MGO Blog Roundtable is brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
And we are back, folks. Let's go right back to the phones, go to West Michigan, and talk to Charlie. Charlie, you're on the MGO Blog Roundtable on Sports Talk 1050, WTK. What's up?
Hey, good morning, gents. Hey. Quick question for you, based on your opinion, a little bit of a hypothetical. I'm wondering, to my untrained eye, I'm trying to figure out how much the offensive line's improvement this year is based on what Ed Warner is doing with them, as opposed to what Shea has brought to the offense. So that's part A. Part B is, what happens if you put Brandon Peters behind this line? In the words of the great Jake, I will hang up and listen. Go Blue.
I think a lot of it is Warner. So Patterson has escapability, but hasn't really had to use it very much. And also, like, his timer is kind of going off too quickly a little bit, which is something I would never have thought I would say this year. So I give most of the credit to Warner. And, of course, you have to give credit to John Runyon, and you have to give credit to Juwan Bushel-Beatty.
Yep.
Because, like, those guys,
man.
I mean,
they're the ones that can work. And Cesar Ruiz.
Well, and Ruiz, I think Ruiz
Ruiz coming into the season, right?
I think Brian is spot on. He is exactly right. That while when you're talking about Cesar and Bredesen and Onwenu, I think that there is a baseline of expectation there that those guys are. I mean, we're always expected to
be pretty good,
right?
Pretty
good, yeah. Whereas with
tackles, you didn't know
with Juwan and this is this is not to denigrate them or disparage them in any way, but the expectation level just wasn't that high. And the first game certainly didn't give you any confidence that it was going to get better. And it has gotten significantly better. And those guys deserve a ton of credit for it. I sat down and spoke at length this week with Juwan Bushel-Beatty. He was like, man, did you? Because he was a guy who's been open about struggling with confidence in the past. Like, what did you think after the first game? And he said it was really us collectively and making a decision about obviously with the coaching from Ed Warner about how we need to play in order for this not to happen again. And it really, I think to Brian's other point, Ed Warner simplified things enough to allow those guys to move forward. That has been huge. And that he talked about that a ton. He said, it's so much simpler. I don't have to think as much on the field.
Yeah. To Charlie's point though, also, I think having the quarterback involved in the run game also makes it easier for the offensive line. I mean, you add an extra. Defending a running quarterback is hard, especially when you can throw it some. Yeah. And so adding that dimension, I also think has helped the offensive line to some extent.
And that,
so
I think that was a process for Patterson too.
Yeah.
Like Patterson, I felt early in the year like he just didn't want to keep the ball, and I didn't feel that at all against Penn State. He was confident in his reads. Right. When he got in the open field, he wasn't sliding down. He was like, I'm going to go get some yards. Yep. He wasn't taking crazy risks or anything, but he was able to juke some guys. He was assertive as a runner.
Yeah, even more than that, from my point of view, there were a couple of reads where I thought, is that the right read? I couldn't quite tell, but then it was. I mean, he made hard reads, and he made them right, I thought. I mean, you thought the reads were easier. I wasn't so sure on a couple of them. So
sure.
But, you know, yeah, I think both things are true.
Let's go back to the phone, 734-998-1050. Talk to Eric in South Carolina. Eric, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey.
Good.
Hey, now you guys can tell me if I'm crazy with my thought process or
whatever.
You're
crazy.
But, but, you know, I'm down here in South Carolina. I'm in SEC country. And I'm going to tell you, I know Alabama probably got better players than Michigan has. But I don't necessarily think that if they lose a game, if they lose in that championship game, they should get in over Michigan based on LSU played two good teams this season and lost outside of the Georgia win. They got blown out at home against Alabama and lost to Florida by 9 on the road, which Florida got blew out by Missouri at home. So when you really look at Alabama's resume versus Michigan's resume, Alabama only beat one good team, and that's LSU. And LSU are the two-loss team, which they have no business being number 7. I don't care. I mean, I'm just tired of the SEC bias where people think because a team came out of SEC is automatically better than everyone else. Because I have watched LSU play a few times this season, and I haven't been impressed. Their offense is very pedestrian. There's nothing to it. And so I don't get what the big hoopla is. So maybe I'm crazy. Is Michigan's resume, if Michigan went out and they have a blowout win at Ohio State and they blow out Northwestern and Alabama loses to Georgia in the SEC title game, would it be any way legit that they can – I mean, I know it can happen, but would it be legit if they did it?
I mean, I think I absolutely hang up and not. Sorry about that.
Thanks, Eric.
I think he's absolutely right. Like, I think that you couldn't make the case because Michigan would have a conference championship. They'd have better wins. They'd have a better non-conference schedule. They'd have a better loss. Like, I think it would be really, really hard for a 12-1 Alabama to be justified over Michigan. Not to say that they won't try it.
Right.
Sam is skeptical. You can.
I know. I don't have faith. Mm-hmm. I don't have faith in committee.
Suits in a room. Committees. Right. Well, Mike Slive is no longer on that committee, so.
But Gene Smith is, and he doesn't like Michigan.
Well, Gene Smith is Gene Smith. I don't.
Let's go to the phone.
It isn't happening. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan might go 12-1, but Bama ain't losing to Georgia. So
let's talk to Don in Sylvania. Don, your last up. What's up?
Good morning, gentlemen. I think we're putting the cart before the horse. Number one, we cannot count out Indiana. We have not been that. They've been a team that we've struggled with. Number two, Ohio State and Columbus. Everybody's, like, discounting them. Yes, they've had their trouble. I think losing Barrett, their mobile quarterback, is basically they've hidden a lot of their sins on their offensive line, and now their sins are starting to come to fruition. Same thing as us, you know, Devin Gardner. And, you know, hit a lot of our sins for quite a number of years. And, you know, now we have a mobile quarterback with a read option that Ohio State lived on and fed on for years and burned a lot of teams. The bottom line is, you know, I still think we cannot count out Ohio State. I think they're completely loaded with talent. They're starting to get their run game going. And actually, past and present history has been terrible with Ohio State. I think they are definitely in need of a mobile quarterback for Urban Meyer's offense. But I don't think we can count that game out and start talking about Indianapolis. I mean, we have not had history down there very well.
But so here's the thing. First, the only folks for whom it's important
to not overlook Ohio State is, you know, is the team itself, the guys mm-hmm. or the team. As long as they aren't doing it, it's fine. But that's not what we're doing. We're talking about scenarios. I'm not counting Ohio State as a given.
No.
As a victory.
No,
but
no.
No one
in this room thinks that you know, oh, yeah, it's a lock. Michigan's going right. to beat Ohio yeah, State. There's
discussing scenarios doesn't mm-hmm. mean that you have discounted the possibility of losing that game to a very talented Ohio State team on the road.
This is how I feel about the Ohio State game. Every time I get more confident about the Ohio State game, I get less confident about the Ohio State game. That's where I am.
And I actually understand what you mean by
yeah,
that.
I should be confident.
Before we talk about that game, they got to go up to East Lansing this weekend, and I think that...
I thought you were talking about Michigan. I was like, not again.
No, Ohio State goes up to East Lansing. Big time upset chance right there.
The spread's only like 3.5, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have it at like 1. Ohio State by 1.5.
All right, well, we'll see.
So pretty close to 50-50.
We got to get out of here, folks.
Better than us!
No!